and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. It's 2 minutes after five, and we're ready to rock.
Yes. We are fortunately delayed because of some ukulele issues.
Yes, traffic or something, but, you know, that's understandable. But.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will be talking about Canadians that are way too interested in the U.S. election, and we're not talking about ourselves. NDP MP Nikki Ashton went south of the border to door knock for Bernie Sanders, but should she have? And we'll talk about where to draw the line when it comes to Canadian intervention in U.S. political affairs. And then we will talk about our own elections and how we can reform them. The Liberals agreed to an NDP proposal to make the House Committee representing... to make the House committee that is discussing electoral reform more proportional. But now they have less than a year to come up with something to replace First Past the Post, so can they do it? And finally, we will look at the Toronto by-election in Ward 2, where we will ask if one good Ford deserves another, as Michael Ford is in the race to replace his dear departed uncle on City Council. But first, what we're calling on the website Super Tuesday 12, so very tired.
Is it that many?
I don't know if it's been that many Super Tuesdays.
Goodbye, but Super Tuesday.
It's they almost need a new name for, I mean, if it's like in 2020.
Spectacular Tuesday.
Yeah, if it's in 2020, it's the same deal, or there's going to be that many Super Tuesdays that matter. Yeah, they'll need a new name. Anyway, there have been some doings today, so in case you don't follow the news while you're at work or school or whatever. Today, Bernie Sanders met with Barack Obama at the White House, and it seemed like a good meeting. They were like patting each other on the back as they walked from the residence to the West Wing, and so there was some good talk on CNN about the significance.
Good times.
The significance of that, and then afterwards, Bernie Sanders came out, talked to the press, gave a brief statement where it basically sounded like he was going to acquiesce the race to Hillary Clinton. And then a short while later, the Clinton campaign released a video, a YouTube video with Barack Obama officially endorsing Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination for president. I just saw on Twitter just a couple of minutes ago that Elizabeth Warren, who's going to be appearing on the Rachel Maddow show tonight, she will also be endorsing Hillary Clinton. So those are two huge endorsements for Hillary Clinton today. Meanwhile, our old friend Donald Trump met with Republican donors today because they're just trying to find a way to support him without feeling scuzzy. Because... you know, it keeps, again today, they were showing clips of like Paul Ryan basically trying to talk himself out of how he can endorse Donald Trump when Donald Trump keeps saying that, you know.
He's so torn. Racist. He's like, oh, I can't do it.
I don't know how he gets out of bed these days, poor Paul Ryan. I feel sorry for him. It's just like, and I mean, his excuses. I don't know if they're excuses, but, I mean, his justifications are like, well, yeah, things Donald Trump say are morally and ethically repugnant, but come on, we don't want Hillary Clinton as president.
Oh, man, I tell you, they're all conflicted, I think. Bernie as well. Like, I only saw that part where he was giving the little spiel after talking to Barack, and he says, yes, I want to work with Hillary. So I thought the same thing. It's like the next thing's going to be I formally concede, but no, he's going to it. It's a bit of a mixed message, really. He's determined to go to the convention because the argument is his and others who support him is that the superdelegates don't vote until whatever. What's the date? July? Whenever their convention is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're saying that it isn't over until the delegates actually cast the ballots. But and it sounds like the delegates pledged anyway. I was reading that this morning or yesterday. The superdelegates are like 574 for Hillary. Decided or pretty much pledged, and for Bernie, or as initials I have, BS. No, I like Bernie, actually. I just, BS, what is that? Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, 48
of the superdelegates. Now, mind you, considering everything, Sanders still took Montana and North Dakota. He took North Dakota with 64%, which is fairly significant. It's not like – what I find weird, too, about these numbers is that against Trump – Cruz and Kasich are still getting votes. I don't know if that's just like a protest vote or something, but
it's because they're on the ballot.
No, I know, but it's like at this point, you know, most people are like, I guess you got to cast your ballot, but it just seems really weird that
it is a protest.
It's kind of like when the candidate dies, you know, and their name, the ballots have been printed, and they still, it is a protest vote, I guess. There's lots of conflict. And as you were saying about Trump, there is a bit of kind of nose holding for the nominee. It seems like a lot of. I was reading the famous people that have come out in support of Trump, including Tom Brady, the football player, Hulk Hogan, and Scott Baio, Chachi Baio, or what was that? I want to say everybody loves
Charles in Charge.
Charles in Charge. Should have found the Charles in Charge theme music. No, actually, no, never. And Wayne Newton. So it's like all the B graders, pretty much going. You know.
That's like who you get to when you're looking for like a special guest star on your sitcom in 1980.
Yeah, those of you that are old enough to remember The Love Boat, I just named a whole Love Boat cast.
Oh, that is
there.
That does sound like a Love
Charo
Boat guest cast.
And you know, somebody Richard Dawson. There you go.
I think it'd be
We've
great.
We've totally gone off track, but it's really easy with Trump.
I think it'd be great if they had Isaac as the bartender at the Republican National Convention, and then the failure will be complete.
But a win for Isaac, because I liked it. I thought he was pretty cool.
But to go back to the Democrats for a minute, I think the tone Bernie had today, he's not going to say – he's not going to come right out and say he quits. I mean, he's done more than anyone thought he could possibly do. This time last year, it was locked up for – HRC, if we're going to use initials, but it was locked up for her.
Yes,
but he made a race of it, and it you know, he's won 22 states, and that's nothing to sneeze at. And I think at the end of the day, what we'll see is there's still one last primary. There's the Washington D.C. primary next Tuesday. Not wholly significant, but you know, sort of symbolically significant.
Location for sure.
But I think after that he will step aside, and I think he will say, and I think there's a lot of hardcore Bernie support that has got to warm up to the idea that they've now got to get behind Hillary. I think in the back of their minds that day was going to come.
Oh yeah.
But they refuse to believe, and I mean, there's still people who think that Hillary's going to get indicted.
Both sides, yeah. Republicans especially, but it's like it's coming from all quarters. It's like,
yeah, if you're online,
but Benghazi, yeah, like
the majority of people online are kind of the young people online are the Bernie folk, there's a fervent dislike for Hillary Clinton. Not that there isn't a fervent dislike for Hillary Clinton, period. I mean, we're talking about two candidates now on both sides who have the worst unfavorables of any presidential candidate ever. But as I said before on our show, she can overcome that. People, once Hillary Clinton assumes her position, whether it is first lady or senator or a secretary of state, people remember they like her and she can get things done. Not necessarily Republicans, but certainly Democrats and independents to whom make up Bernie's constituency.
Yeah, and that was there was some weird stuff too. And that Trump was put out an appeal to the Sanders candidates that you know you're disaffected. It's like you're welcome, you know, come join me. Which you know I guess you got to try. There's probably two or three you know that would do that. And what was Obama's comment on Jimmy Fallon about Trump saying that? It was well, he didn't specifically say Trump, but he meant Trump when he said this isn't reality television, right? So it's like
you get
the reality TV candidate, and then you've got Hillary. But that's the thing that Obama had also said, that she is the most qualified. And I you know, if you look at her resume, she is the most qualified. But then it seems there's been a bit of grumbling in the media, possible spoiler, the Libertarian. So if there's enough disaffected people on both sides, in particular for Trump, or because you know there were Libertarians like Rand Paul. I keep wanting to call him RuPaul. Rand Paul.
No, that's someone
you know,
else.
They're like, I'm a Libertarian. And I believe that Sarah Palin identifies as a Libertarian as well. So Gary Johnson got It was it worked out something like 2.1 million votes, I think, in 2012, something like 1% of the vote. But one poll has had him at 10%. That's nothing to sneeze at, even if it's, you know, within a couple of percent, 19 times out of 20, whatever. That's much higher than one. So could we see a repeat of 2000 with Ralph Nader? It's possible.
It depends.
There could be a spoiler in there. But that, I don't know. Maybe that's maybe they're just sort of whipping that up a
bit. I don't know.
But there seems to be, like I said, disaffected on all sides, right?
So. There are so many Republicans, though, who are like bending over themselves to try and get – and you saw this on Tuesday night. I forget who said it. I saw somebody on CNN who said, well, they put Trump in a straitjacket because he was reading a prepared statement.
Yeah, he actually is a speechwriter now. I saw that.
Yeah.
It's like he's...
So they're trying... So to use the straitjacket analogy, somebody's trying to put pills in him to modify him, I guess. But it's... You have people like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, like we said, are like just trying to get him on point. It's like, stop... Doing
freewheeling
stupid,
is bad. Yeah.
Not just the freewheeling, but the things like going hard on Gonzalo Curiel, who is the judge in one of the Trump University fraud cases.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And there was that thing on Monday where it was the memo came out that or the conference call he made to surrogates. We were like, no, whoever put out the memo to stop talking about this, they're wrong. Keep going on it. That's but this is the kind of thing that people who want to see a Republican in the White House in 2017 don't want him to do. Meanwhile, I think the thing to keep in mind is when we're talking about third-party interlopers or even like polls that show that it's a competitive race. They broke it down by electoral college, which is what decides
that's the
it.
Real, yeah.
And Hillary Clinton currently leads that 330. If the election were held today, she would get 332 electoral college votes to Trump's 206. On the low side, she would get 268, which would put her two away from winning.
Yep.
And on the high side, Trump gets 270, which is the exact number you need. So if everything goes Hillary and everything goes right for Trump, but that's
Florida, right? It'll be Florida.
I hope
Chad.
I hope to never again live to see the day where it comes down to dangling Chad.
It won't be dangling Chads anymore. It'll be like the
I can't live through that again, man.
The machine didn't reboot or something.
But you know what's fascinating though? If it came down to that and it went back to the Supreme Court. If they don't put someone in the Supreme Court November, it's 4-4, which means it'll just go back to Florida. I mean, if that case happens this fall, it's gonna go on even longer because it's
gonna be a wild one, folks.
You thought 2000 was a gong show? If it happens this year, it'll be a bigger gong show. It'll be like the Godzilla of gong shows.
Because as we know, Crooked Hillary will fix it right now. No.
Like, Crooked Hillary.
Crooked Hillary. And she have a nickname for... No, she doesn't have a nickname.
She just called... She... Well, this is...
It would be something light, right? Something... It wouldn't
what's
be...
What's fascinating is she went after him in her foreign policy speech last week. And I can't remember who said it. Well, some Republicans... commentator said it wasn't really like a foreign policy speech. It was a slam Trump speech. And like, yeah, it was. But at the same time, there was no response from the Trump campaign to that. Mm. So she was hitting them hard. And of course, right after that, the thing with the judge, came out. And that sucked all the oxygen. But there still hasn't been any official rebuttal to that speech. And that's sort of where she wins. You know, Trump kind of has good... appeal on the economic jobs front because he's a businessman. He's very, very rich. Again,
he
debatable.
Has stakes.
but she has the foreign policy chops. And I mean, in spite of, you know, they attack her on not just Benghazi, but the entire Libya strategy period. But I mean, that comes from actually having, you know, made decisions
she's
and
been
trying
there.
To accomplish. Yeah, exactly. So
they're taking out Bin Laden. She's staring at the screen there. You know? She's in the room. So that's significant.
And yeah, so it's not in. Yeah, exactly. It's significant, and that's kind of where she the market she kind of has cornered on. It's sort of be interesting to see what matters, or even if he can keep up with her now that it's actually a two-person race. Because yeah, Trump can ingest a lot of the oxygen from the room when it's between two people or it's between several people, but now that it's kind
of between all people, Trump is just like sucking sound.
But now that it's kind of a one-on-one thing, can he, you know, stay on point? Or are people going to start going after him more? I mean, there is a viciousness.
Oh, yeah.
In the media now to, like, really tear into it. And I saw that even in Wolf Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer is the laziest journalist. And I mean that. His idea of exploring an issue, and we're going to get a phone call. Maybe it's Wolf Blitzer defending himself. But no, he brings in person on the left, person on the right. They fight for 5 minutes. And then he takes a commercial break and brings on two more people to fight for another 5 minutes. But even he was going after the Trump surrogates on this. And it really speaks to the idea that maybe finally people are going to call Trump on his whatever.
We call him on his whatever. Yeah, it's quite the scoop of whatever. Exactly.
Especially on this thing where he says he's of Mexican heritage, I'm building a wall. And it's like, well, I can't think of a definition of racism, but, I mean, when you say, basically say ipso facto, he's a Mexican, I'm building a wall, that sounds pretty racist.
He's a Muslim, but keep him out, except for Muhammad Ali, he's okay. Keep him.
And the mayor of London. Yeah.
Yes.
There was a tweet where he was responding to something President Obama said about Muslim athletes. He's like, what Muslim athletes? Name one.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Name two.
Muhammad Ali.
Anyway.
Sorry, Cassius Clay. No, I...
Well, that was...
Say my name.
All right.
Anyway.
Anyway. Back to the U.S. Specifically, there was an incident last Sunday.
Incident... No, it's so funny. It's like it was an international incident.
Well, it wasn't.
Somebody wore a T-shirt.
It was an international incident.
I guess so.
Because it involves...
Okay.
The Canadian politician going to the United States to Nikki Ash, an NDP MP for our Churchill. I can't remember her exact writing, but it's Churchill, Manitoba. Basically, she went to North Dakota, which we said Bernie Sanders won handily, but North Dakota borders Manitoba. And so she went down there, did some door knocking for Bernie, which prompted a pretty strong response in some quarters about whether or not a sitting Canadian politician should be going down and interfering, even if it's just doing some canvassing, in a foreign country's election. And I couldn't find any examples, but I could have sworn I've heard NDP politicians before talk about when, and it happens with both the Liberals and Conservatives, when they bring up American politicos, American strategists.
Or the Australian guy for the Conservatives.
Lyndon Crosby.
Paid guy, good example.
To, like, strategize, to work on a campaign. And I'm like, well, it's one of those things that makes you wonder, well, what's the difference here? Because she went down on her own volition, on her own time, with her own money to do it.
Yeah. I mean, she really should have clarified whether she was doing the shill or was she just on a ride along. You know, I mean, she had the shirt on and then the tweet. Was she just sort of hanging out and seeing how it was going, like as a fact-finding mission, or was she actually campaigning? That's hard to say because, you know, if she went to the door and somebody else was doing the speaking, she's really just hanging out. It'd be like, they would have no idea. The people in North Dakota, well, maybe some of them. There's a lot of Canadians there, but they probably would have no idea who she was. Now, is it meddling? Like, I think the National Post and the Sun both lost their minds over this, right? and it's not as if, like...
Yeah, Robin Urbeck dedicated a whole column to it.
She didn't do anything illegal. The only thing illegal about it is when you start throwing money at candidates in the U.S. I believe that's a big faux pas.
Yes, foreign entities can't.
As it probably should be, but that's... I mean, you can bet foreign entities are donating via laundering and stuff, but that's another story. Yeah. But, you know, I guess she was feeling the burn and felt the urge to go down there, and wisely, she did do it on a Sunday. Can you believe it? Canvassing on the Lord's Day. But anyway.
He's Jewish. It's fine.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, sure. I think they're really making a big deal out of this when I don't really see it as interference. Like, she's not the only one that's endorsed. It's Sherry DeNovo, who has sort of announced her candidacy, sort of. She's not paying the money. I don't know how that's going to work out for her. But she's been very vocal about how she likes the bold politics of Saunders. So he's been getting lots of praise in certain quarters. But, you know, we in Canada, and it happens in other countries, praise other politicians all the time. Like Doug Ford really likes Trump. That was not too long ago where that came up. Now, he didn't campaign for him.
They have so much in common.
Mulcair did his famously pro-Thatcher spiel that came out during the election. And, you know, Mackenzie King really liked Hitler. So it's like, went and met him and said he was a stand-up guy, right? He's the lover of the fellow man. So people in Canadian politics have all kinds of opinions about other political realms, right? Now, I wish she would clarify and say, I was just down hanging out, see how it's done. Yay, democratic socialism. That's my thing. And I'm a supporter. But if she was actually pressing the leaflets into people's hands, I didn't get that impression. But she didn't say either way. That would be problematic. But if she was just checking it out, because they do it all the time. I mean, even within Canada, people do it to other parties. They'll go to other people's conventions. How are they doing this? What are they doing right? What are they doing we don't like? So there's crossover there. It's not as if it's like, no, no one is allowed. Well, I mean, under Harper, kind of. But, you know, so it's not as if it's completely verboten, right? But, yeah, I would call it a gray area, and she probably should really clarify other than, well, I took the weekend and, you know, who really, who goes to North Dakota for the weekend? Nothing against North Dakota, but, like, it's a...
Yeah, South Dakota is where it's at.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, so I don't know. Interestingly, doing the short in Google, I Googled Ashton Sanders. Turns out he's an actor. He was in Straight Out of Compton. So I was like, wow, I get all these hits for Ashton Sanders. It's like, it sounds like a ticket, right? Like, vote Ashton Sanders. But no, he's a guy. He's an actor. So anyway, she's not apologizing for being inspired by Sanders, and I guess that's not all bad. But
he also sounds like the founding partner of like a New York law firm from 1921.
Yes. Yeah.
Or Ashton Sanders and Associates.
A fake Panama Papers company.
Yeah.
Oh, Ashton Sanders Limited.
Don't give them ideas.
No, it's, yeah, it's. I bet if you Google the Panama Papers list, they're both in there. Like Torchwood.
Yeah, I think there's... I mean, personally, I don't care. I find this interesting as a sort of ethical debate. You know, should sitting Canadian politicians be active in foreign campaigns? I would think no. If she was going there down there to be an observer to see, I mean, because let's be honest, if Bernie Sanders were a Canadian politician, he would probably be an NDP politician. He would, you know, he's definitely got that feel. And if she's going down there to siphon off some of that energy to see how he built his. Coalition, you know, how they managed
the
appeal of what he's doing and the organization. I mean, these are keys. A lot of people still think that running for office is like handing in your papers, pounding a few signs, knocking on some doors, going to debates. But there is an incredible data gathering mechanism to modern campaigns now.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the states where it is a science. We're only getting a taste of that here in Canada right now. But in the United States, it is a science. That's the thing the Clinton campaign really wants from Bernie Sanders, not his like endorsement, because there will be plenty of people lining up to endorse Hillary Clinton. And there already have been plenty of people lining up to endorse Hillary Clinton. What they really want is the info, all those names, all those email addresses. Yeah. All those people who they can activate in the coming months to get out the vote, to do the rallies, to do the canvassing. That's the key. And if Nikki Ashton wants to go to North Dakota to see how that works, fine, cool, make it so. She has really seemed into it, though. Like, she posted the picture on Twitter.
Sure.
It's like,
she's feeling
the burn.
Yeah.
And that's fine. It should, you know, but... it's also worth noting Bernie Sanders wasn't in North Dakota at the time.
No, he was in California, trying to...
Yeah.
But didn't really work. But
I think you're right, though. The Sun and National Post went off the deep end. I think there is a legitimate question to ask, and I think it would have helped her immensely just to clarify whether she was going as a fan or as an observer. But
Oh, they really would have lost it if it was like on a Thursday or something, right?
And, well, for sure. And that was that's another important difference. It was on her own time. It's like, I think it was Robin Urbach's piece where she made the point of like, well, she could have been like in her writing doing like constituency work. It's like, yeah, she could have.
Yeah, but, or is that the same one? I was like, well, it's okay to go to the mall on Sunday and shop, but Parliament is actually sitting, so you really shouldn't go anywhere. Like, there's no logic to that argument, right? So
no.
Whether you're at the mall and people know your face, obviously. I mean, yeah, this is the thing with political people. You're always on. Nikki Ashton goes to the mall in Churchill. Like, people are going to ask her political things, right?
Sure.
So what if she's at the mall in Fargo, right?
Or even just like
they wouldn't know who she was.
Yeah, or even just being recognizable. Because I've been downtown, and I've run into when Frank Valeria was our MP, I rose downtown and ran into Frank Valeria, and everyone was like, hey, Frank! And so, I mean, that's what people know
they
you,
said,
right?
Hey, Adam Nicholson! No, that's the joke that'll never die.
Well, for us.
For us, yeah. Like, yeah, but anyway, yeah. These things happen. But, yeah, I usually get Mark. I'm walking downtown, and people are like, hey, Mark! How's, like, I haven't actually met Mark, my twin, but it's happened more than once. So, like, you know, Mark, if you're out there, you know, if somebody comes up to you and yells, hey, Hertz, how you doing? Anyway, so that's all cases of mistaken identity. But there's no mistaking that there are a lot of NDP and lefties in Canada and Pinkos feeling the Saunders burn. But it kind of, I was thinking back to when Jack Layton was still around and had come to town several times. What election would that have been? 08.
Oh,
he was here lots.
Yeah.
And I went and saw him in Royal City Park, which was a fest with Naomi Klein and others.
I was there. There's pictures online.
You were there, yes.
On
we were there together.
Yeah.
We weren't associates then, but I knew you. I knew you. I was like, hey, Nicholson. but listening to that, I mean, Jack Layton was... And don't get me wrong, I didn't dislike Jack Layton, but he was lifting straight. He was looking, he was taking Obama mojo.
Oh, for sure.
He kept using hope and change like it was just steady, right? So, you know, we all sort of echo our heroes, whether they're left or right. You know that there's going to be some, we'll say conservative out there sort of wanting to ride a bit of a Trump wave, right? So they all do it. They all do it. There are original political ideas, and then there's lots of borrowing going on. So I don't know. I wouldn't be so hard on Nikki Ashton. But like I said, if she actually clarified that she wasn't pressing the leaflets into people's hands, I think that would go a long way.
Mm-hmm. No, so, and that's, I think...
So I'll give her a pass.
Well, I think that's the lesson of the day. It's like, again, you have to sort of... clarify your intent, and everybody's watching, and everyone's looking for a political advantage, and you know, you kind of have to be careful. Like, she may be a Bernie fan, no law against it, but
careful with your tweets there.
Careful with your tweets.
Because I thought the guy beside her looked like the president of the U of G, actually. I know it wasn't him, but you have a good look at him.
He looks like
Vaccarino for sure. So, what were you doing on Sunday, President Vaccarino? No, that's...
The picture's a bit blurry because it is on our website, but
I don't want to shake it up here. But
President Vaccarino's grandfather,
like,
maybe, I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
Okay,
Franco will like you.
Anyway, we will take a break now. We're gonna play some music, play some PSAs, and then come back and jam some more about current affairs. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Yeah, well, I don't know, this is Tasha T, and you don't know anytime I'm in Guelph, I always tune into Nikki Dredd and the Crooked Beat, all you mean, man, on CFRU 93.3 FM, every Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m., you don't know, we're gonna rectify the problem, let's live and learn to solve them, we're gonna make it work together for the children. Years of reggae revolution. Set it!
Gonna end up working in Fort McMurray. Negative 45 below in Alberta is my destiny. Gonna make a ton of dough. Gonna put it up my nose. I really hope I pass this hit test. Gonna make $1 million. Buy a really big truck. When I get home, I'm gonna tailgate you. Gonna end up working in Fort McMurray. Negative 45 below in Alberta is my destiny.
Everyone from Newfoundland, everyone from Cape Breton. Oh, is there anyone left at home? Too bad there is no job back in my hometown, 'cause I don't really wanna go. Gonna end up working in Fort McMurray.
And that's quite possibly the shortest song we've ever played on the show. That was B.A. Johnson from his album, whose name I can't say on the air, Blank Sucks. And that was going to end up working in Fort McMurray. There's not many songs in the station I know about that mention Fort McMurray, but as you've probably seen on the news, people are heading back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think B.A. Johnson wants to go work there. But then again, it looks like he's being held captive by Jabba the Hutt on the cover of his album. So, interesting guy. Folk and roll. So... B.A. Johnson on Mysterious Mammoth Records or something. I don't know.
Is that what the record company's
well,
called?
Well, it's a Mammoth, but since I don't have my glasses, listen to me. Mammoth Care Recording Companies.
I don't have my bifocals.
Where's my trifoculars? I don't know, my ocular devices.
All right.
The print's too small for old-timers like me.
Speaking of old-timers.
Who believe in first past the post.
No, yes, exactly. As you know, electoral reform is on the radar of the Liberal government, although perhaps not on the front burner, definitely on one of the side burners. But there was some strange developments in the last couple of weeks. One was Miriam Monsef, who is the Minister of Democratic Reform, came out and accepted a proposal from Nathan Cullen. I believe he is the Democratic Reform critic for the NDP.
Yes, I think so.
But he suggested that the committee looking at electoral reform should be made up according to proportionality of share of vote in the last election.
Hmm.
And Liberals said, okay, that's a good idea. We'll take it and put it into place. So what was a committee of 6 Liberals, 3 Conservatives, 1 NDP, plus a Bloc member and Elizabeth May, the two of whom wouldn't have voting powers. Instead, it's going to be 5 Liberals, 3 Conservatives, 2 NDP, 1 Bloc, and Elizabeth May, who will have voting powers. So the Liberals will form a minority majority or majority minority on the committee.
Hmm.
So
it's more proportional, isn't it, that way?
Well, that was
sort of
that was the idea.
Wink. Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, it is kind of interesting, the politics behind it. It's one of a number of moves that Trudeau's been talking about, making sure that he's not acting in the traditions of the previous government, shall we say, in mm-hmm. terms of...
A little bit of leeway there, right?
Right.
He's trying to... A little bit of give.
Right.
Which is all right. I guess that's part of the regime change that we've seen. And also, if folks are wondering about it, Trudeau was the one that did say the 2015 election will be the last first past the post.
Mm.
Now, whether it's going to be – this is the great question and what the committee is going to analyze and come up with. What will our new electoral system be? Although it would seem, as we've seen over the years, the past 11 years, it seems, I was only able to find 3 of the 4 provincial referendums that we're talking about in terms of changing electoral systems in provinces. PEI was 64%, keep it the same. Ontario's, you'll remember the MMP referendum, was 63%, keep it the same.
Yeah.
And this is a provincial level, of course. And in British Columbia, they said yes to the STV vote by 57%, but they came up with this. There was 60% required for the supermajority. So it just shows you can draw the line anywhere and say, no, it's not 50% plus 1. It's actually 60% that we need. For this, which that's the single transferable vote. And there's all sorts of flavors of proportional systems and distribution systems. There's really strange, difficult to explain ones. And I think that's the one that we're probably going to get in Canada, where it's just this crazy pooling of votes and then repooling of votes and then somebody emerges. Now, of course, the other aspect to this too is that the Conservatives, among others, the Liberals are saying it's just the Conservatives, but there is a movement afoot to have a referendum on this issue for the whole nation to say, okay, look, what do we want to do here? Do we want to change it? Do we want to keep it the same? And who came out? Jean-Pierre Kingsley, former chief electoral officer, came out and said a referendum is impossible under the current rules because it has to be a constitutional matter. And then there's other intellectuals Where did that come from? There's other people in the know that are saying, nope, you know what? It's totally constitutional. We should have a referendum. But the thing is, the liberals aren't really interested in that anyway. So I think what we see is what we're going to get. It's this committee, and then they're going to sort it out. I doubt very much it will go to a referendum unless there's this mass outpouring of the people saying, you know, other than the Conservatives and the Star's editorial board saying, you know, this should probably go to a referendum. So there was an Ipsos Reid poll that said 73% of people would like to be able to decide the electoral system. So that's fairly significant.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this, and true confession, I was one of the 60 that voted to keep the FPTP in 2007.
Oh, really?
And that's because that had nothing to do with me not loving FPTP so much. It had to do with the manner in which mixed member proportional was introduced, and it seemed like it
poorly.
It was slapped together. Yeah. There was no real information on what it involved, and or who the proportional members would be, or how they would be chosen. It seemed like it was slapped together because the Liberals promised that it was going to go to a referendum in the next election cycle, and it. You know, you can't just kind of slap stuff together. That's the concern of what I think is going to be happening here. It's interesting that Kingsley came out and said we don't have to have a referendum, and there was a referendum act actually that said referendums are meant to be reserved for constitutional matters. This is not a constitutional matter. It doesn't say in the Constitution how we elect people. And on that point, I think that sounds correct to me because. First of all, referendums, as we've always talked about when we're talking about referendums, favor the status quo. Second of all, the voting system's been changed before. Think about when women got the vote.
Yes.
Could you think of what would happen in the 1919 if it was a referendum to let women have the vote? Yep. And it's all men who are...
Or indigenous people in Canada, too.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Was that 1960?
Yeah. So it's...
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it is kind of ridiculous. However, a conservative politician had an interesting idea. And that's Scott Reed, who's kind of taken point on the whole let's have a referendum thing. He suggested that there should, in a policy paper in 2005, that we should have a preferential ballot mm-hmm. for the referendum so that you would have to rank which type of election you would want, which I find interesting because what it would do is force people to learn about each form
yep.
being offered. And then rank it accordingly. I think I'm not sure what the government might plan on doing, but I think that is a neat compromise. That I wouldn't mind because at least I feel like there's an education component rather than like, I don't want this newfangled system. I like to vote how I vote. Stamp, stamp. But, I mean, that's my impression of a grizzled old person who doesn't like change, but there you have it.
Angry conservative. Uber driver. So... Somebody who's mad. Yeah, and that's exactly it. And if they come up, there are lots of systems at play in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think the simplest thing to get across to people would be if this system would improve the odds of their candidate winning rather than this just sort of people just getting cut off. The famous argument in Canada was from the Conservatives after the Kim Campbell trounce. Mm-hmm. And it was Chrétien. So that was when we saw the Liberals, the Reform, sucking votes away from the Conservatives. And we just saw this void where the Conservatives were down to two seats. It's probably the lowest for a major party we've ever seen. It was Charest and what was her name again? Elsie. I think she's gone now. She was from East Coast. Adam's going, who? Elsie. I'm thinking back, and it's more than 20 years. So
that was the summer... Jurassic Park came out, okay?
Okay, so that's – you just weren't paying any attention whatsoever. So I'm just going to vote. I'm going to spoil my ballot.
I didn't vote that. I was like 14.
What? You were thinking about it, though. You must have been. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's possible, but we're concentrating on dinosaurs. So, yeah, because our FPT, first past both, is a bit of a dinosaur system. But back then, the cons were complaining. It's like – we got 3 million votes, but we only got two seats. It's not fair. And you see it all the time, too. Like in the last election, it was like the NDP got 13% of the seats, but they had almost 20% of the vote. Now the Liberals went with, what was it, 38?
39.
Was it higher than that? 39. So it's, you know, you can be the government with 36%. That doesn't seem right, does it? Or even the Greens, who had, well, they have the one seat, which is 0.3%, it seems. but they had 3.4% of the vote. And there's certain tipping points where different electoral systems would kick in. Like if you have 4%, you automatically get a seat. That's one. That's a proportional system, right? It's like you just get this. But the argument has always been, well, with that kind of system, particularly in Canada, you don't get the regional, you know, it's just somebody from the party gets the seat and they don't necessarily represent an area. And we're so geographically large that I would think that if, you know, the BC votes gave X number of seats, but Ontario people were getting them, because the potential is there with a proportional system that they run a slate. So it doesn't matter where the person is from. And is there going to be a Toronto bias? Is there going to be a Quebec bias? You know, these are the types of things that people object to with proportional systems, because it's not we're a very regional country, but that's not necessarily the case either with proportional systems. You can have the transferable vote where it's, you know, like you say, the runoff, where your second choice's votes come back into play if no one has 50%. I quite like that one. And if no one's hit the bar yet, that your second choices are factored into, because that's significant too. If you want to know, like, if a range in an area, you know, you potentially have somebody voting conservative and liberal, or any old way you choose. And it also makes it more fair for the, well, let's not say the lesser parties, but, you know, the fringe would do better, I think, numerically if you had these runoffs. So we're going to see something along those lines. I hope it's not like MMP, because that was a train wreck. That was an absolute train wreck.
This is the thing with the any proportional representation is I think there has to be specificity in terms of who these people are and what they're representing, right? It can't be just like liberal A, B, C, conservative D, E, F, NDP, G, H, I, et cetera, et cetera. That was one of my problems with the MMP, was just like, who are these people and how are they going to get chosen?
Where did they come from? Who the hell are these people?
But it could be another Senate thing, right? It could be another partisan reward for years of good works with the party. It could be like,
that's it too.
We're getting the celebrity superstars a la Duffy Wallen and we're filling in a regional blank. You know, we don't have an MP from, let's say, Saskatchewan, so we're going to give it to somebody from Saskatchewan so we can show, you know, regional pluralism. It's just got to be kind of very specific, and that's why I still like my idea from last summer, which is like, make the Senate proportional. Like, make the House elected. You elect your MP, but at the same time you say what party you want in the Senate.
That would make total sense.
That would be probably the most quickest, simplest, elegant way for proportionality, at least in my opinion. That's why it'll never happen.
Yeah, and they would have to buy out all the senators too, and it would cost millions. And they need Camembert in their retirement, right? So
she's never going to shake that. It's going to be on her tombstone. Except that there's a huge vacancy in the Senate right now. So, I mean, this would be the time to do it, right? There's 20, like,
clear the decks.
22 seats. Maybe that's not 22 because they appointed 7. But, I mean, there's going to be a lot of turnover in the Senate. So, you know, this would be the time, I think, to make it happen. But
yeah, and you'd see even a couple of Greens in there probably, among others. So,
well, it would be nice. It'd be nice to see that
You'd actually see some official NDP in there beyond Francis Lankin, who they sort of disowned because they still like that whole, we don't have any senators. No, you actually do. You really do. Anyway.
Round four. Mike Ford. We should actually didn't plan it that way, but wish we did. Anyway, as you may recall, city councilor, former mayor Rob Ford, passed away a couple of months ago. Toronto decided they will have a by-election, which I think as Rob would have wanted, to fill his council seat. And a total of 9 candidates are running so far, but the person with the most name cachet and probably recognition is a young man, 22 years old, named Michael Ford. Of course, his name is really Michael Douglas Aldo Ford Stirp. But
yes,
He legally changed his name in 2014 to Michael Douglas Ford.
Because of the negative connotations of his father's name, right? His dad actually murdered a guy.
Yes.
And stabbed his girlfriend. So I probably wouldn't want his last name either, right?
True, but I think a lot of people are wondering if it wasn't more for the positive connotations of his new surname.
Oh, well, there's that too. I mean, he looks, you know, he looks family. He looks like a Ford. I know we shouldn't judge people on their looks, but you see him and you say, yeah, his uncles are definitely Rob and Doug for sure.
I think he's lost some weight since 2014.
I wasn't talking about his girth. I'm just talking about you see him at like,
oh yeah,
you see Mike Ford and it's like, yeah, he's part of the family, the Etobicoke family. Yeah, and of course he was around before. You may remember that he was running in Ward 2 in Etobicoke and stepped down so
yeah.
Rob could run because he was sick, and Rob Ford won and then, of course, passed away. And that was when Doug was running for mayor. So it's not as if he's a rookie, and he's a school board trustee.
Yeah.
His CV is pretty good. He went to Humber College, and he was an account executive at Deco Labels. I'm not sure if that's still his job. But he was also a camp counselor, which I laugh because so was Trudeau. So there's some, you know, keep giving it to Trudeau about being a camp counselor. Well, so was Michael Ford. Now, he's definitely a Ford, but he seems just that little bit different. Although, in terms of, let's say, communicating with the media, because I actually was trying to email him to see if we could get him on as a guest. But what happened was the CAPTCHA on his website just kept failing. I tried about 14 times, no word of a lie, and it just kept sort of booting me out. And I'm like, yeah, you really don't want my email. And then I didn't get a chance to call him. But I just wanted to see if it would come on. But there seems to be, you know, that similar to his the rest of the family in terms of not liking the media. Although looking at his website, electmichaelford.com, is very interesting because he seems a bit more progressive than the uncles. He's still a conservative, by all means, for sure, but he seems big on something called sustainable community investment,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a bit of a deviation. And he's also looking at his Twitter account. He's wishing people happy Ramadan. And he did a shout-out to people on Bike to Work Day, which is, you know, Rob Ford hated cyclists, right? He really did. It was almost irrational the way he hated bikes, but
yeah.
Mike Ford's like, stay hydrated on Bike to Work Day. I was like, wow, that's a very kind shout out. So it seems like he's a little, you know, kinder, gentler Ford than he's still riding the wave, though. He did the labels, you know, not yeah. Deco labels, but the Ford Nation banner flies high with this guy.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is, I mean, yeah, there are positive signs. And there was a profile of him in the Globe last fall, which was fairly glowing, as those profiles sort of are. But a lot of people, you know, read that and like, hey, he's not so bad. He's actually like the nice Ford. He's like the Marilyn Munster of the Ford family.
Which, or Lily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the two. But yeah, he seems like he's got some sort of animus of his own. My question is, how much of this is him like with a genuine interest in serving, and how much of this is him being groomed by the family? Because you have Doug Ford campaigning with him saying he believes in saving the taxpayers' money and believes in subways and believes in customer service, which is like all of his and Rob's talking points. That was kind of like the only three things they were worried about. And yeah, I looked at his Michael Ford's website too, and he's talking about sustainable transportation, alternate transportation, public transit, and there isn't a lot of detail there in terms of what public transit means to him. Does that mean LRT? Does that mean buses? Does that mean bike lanes? Or does he mean subways? I think I want to believe that a Ford can be cooperative, can be forward-thinking, be not obstinate,
mm-hmm.
be someone who can go along to get along. But, I mean, he's also a 21, 22-year-old kid with Big Uncle Doug.
Backing him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was on the – he got the school board job, but he's going to quit, so I suppose you could call him a quitter. But the school board trustee is a stepping stone for many, many, many political careers. So, because it's that little bit easier to get elected to the school board. That's not to say he's doing a good or bad job. I don't know, but it didn't sound like he was making a mess of it. So, he seems like an interesting enough young man, and of course with the name recognition, and having been on the school boards, having been elected, he's definitely got a leg up in that area. I'm not sure. I had no idea that there was 9 candidates running already.
It's a motley crew.
It usually is. By-elections in Toronto are their own entity. They're just kind of like this. Everybody wants a piece of the...
I can't read my writing here, but I think it's Jeff Canning, who is a local businessman. Christopher Strain, who is a recent immigrant, but he does urban redevelopment. And then you have people like Kevin Clark, who is a perennial candidate for the People's Party.
I think he follows both of us on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy Talpa, who's, I think, run in every Toronto election since 1980 in various wards. You have Glenn Smith, who is a pro-pot advocate and a promoter. I can't pronounce
Roundup the usual suspects.
Yeah. Chatene Cavalier, who's also run in several different ridings. So, I mean, it's a by-election, too, so these things typically don't tend to grab that sort of widespread attention. But this isn't like in 2014, where there seemed like Andre Demise ran in 2014.
Yes. He's not running, is he?
He hasn't announced.
Oh, I thought he would, but...
No, he hasn't announced, The close of nominations is tomorrow.
Oh, so you never know.
So,
could be 40 people running by tomorrow. So.
No, there could be.
Yeah, no, it's...
And the vote is July 25th, so...
We'll give the full results here on the
baby
election show for one by-election.
Maybe.
4 hours. I promise I won't swear.
We'll do it CNN style. Yes. Just like nonstop. And
we need that music that they have.
And
the
magic wall. We'll need a magic wall even though this
every
is on
10
radio.
Seconds. Magic radio wall.
Magic radio wall.
More sound effects like we had on election night. But
So Michael Ford, I think, is probably going to win in a cakewalk. And then it'll be interesting to see what he do. It's like, yeah, you can serve on... the school board, attention tends not to be paid terribly much to what goes on in the school board. It's like buried on, you know, page 10, 11, 12 of the front section of the paper. City council, that's going to be a whole new ballgame because if he's going to, you know, carry on Rob's legacy of, like, always being the guy in the way... Or if he's going to show some signs that he's going to be someone who can be cooperative, someone who can engage in meaningful debate and not just be like purely ideologically driven, I think that's going to be fascinating to watch.
I want him to do one of those, okay, Uncle Doug, I got this, you know, just give him the whole out of the way.
Well, so. Right, and that's the thing. He's kind of like Uncle Doug's been kind of, it looks like a John Hughes movie sometimes with the two of them because they both wore yellow to the council debate about Uber.
Tommy Boy.
And they're both like, yeah, we're looking out for the working guy and, you know, we're defending the taxpayer and that kind of thing.
Shtick.
Yeah, that's what the thing is. It is shtick now. I try to avoid using the word taxpayer because these days in my own writing because it kind of denotes like we're a special class because we pay taxes. Well, everybody pays taxes. If he's going to get away from that, I'll be interested to see what he does.
And people who use taxpayer in any discussion generally are going to be jerks. So. No, and just in my view, no.
Well, that seems like a good place to leave it on.
It goes hand in hand. So. If you jerks want to come on here and talk taxes, you're welcome anytime. An open invitation.
And we are going to have jerks coming in to talk taxes. No, I'm just kidding. Just to get you guys updated about some special guests we have coming in the next couple of weeks. Next Thursday, Kathy Downer, City Councilor for Ward 5, will be here on June the 30th. So 2 weeks from... or 3 weeks from today, I should say. Guelph Police Chief Jeff DeReuter is going to be here. And then Christine Billings and Mark McKinnon are also on tap. We're waiting for them to work out their schedules, see which Thursday they can come in. And then we will also be trying to get some more people in through the summer because we're going to be here all summer long. If you have questions you want to ask any of these people, of course, feel free to post them to our various social media feeds or our emails, and we're just going to give you all that information. So you can connect with us at opensourcesguelph.com. That's our website, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook. At OS underscore Guelph is our Twitter feed. And, of course, you can download the Open Sources Guelph podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. You can get in touch with me personally at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or at my blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter and Scotty Hertz on Facebook as well. And I always mention the Spanner book, but it's been pretty quiet there lately. But I've had a bit of time on my hands, so something may come down the pipe. And a little bit of late-breaking political news before we end here. Michael Baldassaro, well-known advocate from Church of the Universe and regular marijuana party candidate, and for other parties as well, has died of cancer today. Michael Baldassaro was 67. And he was known in Guelph a bit, as well as down in Hamilton when the Church of the Universe lived on the Imico property. He is known in town. So that's our late-breaking story before the top of the hour.
That's good because it's music at the top of the hour. DJ Sounds Good to Me is up next here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And, of course, Open Sources Guelph will be back here next week, Thursday at 5 p.m., with more news and information and topics, and we will see you all then.